If you truly loved your mother, you would sit down and write her a lengthy letter. That's sincere connection, not just the obligatory signature on a greeting card. There really was a homecoming. I mean, that's the simplest way to explain it, that you need to take the time out of your busy lives and to spend that one day with your mother, and it's not too much to ask.
That's how the founder of Mother's Day thought we should celebrate the holiday. Today, historian Dr. Catherine Antolini tells us about the woman who invented Mother's Day and what a truly independent thinker she was. I'm Milan Verveer, and this is Seneca's 100 Women to Hear. We are bringing you 100 of the world's most inspiring and history-making women you need to hear. Anna Jarvis created Mother's Day, which officially began in 1908. But if you think it's all about corsages and chocolates, well, think again. Jarvis hated anything that commercialized Mother's Day, or in any way altered her vision for the day. So she went toe-to-toe with florists and greeting card sellers, and even Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt. We learned fascinating details about Jarvis from Dr. Antolini, a history professor at West Virginia Wesleyan College. Among those facts is the irony that while Jarvis created the day to honor her own mother, she was never a mother herself. Listen and learn why Anna Jarvis is one of Seneca's 100 women to hear. So welcome, Dr. Antolini. Is it fair to call Anna Jarvis the mother of Mother's Day?
It's fair to call her that. She would never call herself that, though. She would always call herself the founder of Mother's Day, but she considered the mother of Mother's Day to be actually her own mother. So she always gave her own mother, Ann Reeves Jarvis, credit for the idea of the day. So even though we might refer to Anna as the mother of Mother's Day, she never called herself that.
So what was it that Anna Jarvis did to make Mother's Day an American holiday? And perhaps you could also tell us what life was like at the time for women and for mothers.
So Anna Jarvis is interesting in her own right because she was this independent woman in the early 20th century trying to lead this movement. And she's unusual because she is a woman who never marries or has children, yet dedicates her life to creating this national holiday. Not just a national holiday, it becomes an international holiday in honor of mothers. So the first Mother's Day celebration is on May 10th, 1908. And so that's the kind of start of from then on out, we're going to celebrate a Mother's Day every second Sunday in May. But for those first years, it's her moving this movement. I mean, she starts this huge letter writing campaign. She reaches out to every governor in every state. She reaches out to any politician on the national level that she thinks can help her. She reaches out to churches. She reaches out to newspaper editors, magazine editors. She reaches out to any kind of powerful businessmen that she thinks can help her. So it's this powerful movement that she leads.
What was her motivation? Why did she do that?
Well, one of my favorite quotes about her is she's that, "I created Mother's Day not because I loved my mother, it's because she loved me." And so she would say that. But the story is that story dates back to an event that supposedly happened in Anna Jarvis's childhood. Her mother, Mrs. Jarvis, taught Sunday school. Mm-hmm. And so Mrs. Jarvis, this was in 1876, and Mrs. Jarvis was giving her Sunday school lesson on Mothers of the Bible. And after she finished her lesson, she said this prayer, right? She goes, "I hope and pray that someone sometime will found a memorial Mother's Day commemorating her for the matchless service she renders to humanity in every field of life. She is entitled to it." So Anna says, "I'm 12 years old. I overhear my mother say this, and it just stuck with her.
Interesting.
And yes. And so, and then Anna also mentions that she's, you know, that wasn't the first time she heard her mother say, I just really wish that somebody will create a day in honor of mothers. So when Mrs. Jarvis passes away in 1905, that's when Anna starts thinking about somebody, you know, my mother had this prayer to create this day. I should be the one who does it. And so it's really in 1907 then that she really kind of starts this movement, which begins with this letter writing campaign. So we have the first official ceremony in 1908. So she continues the letter writing campaign, and she's reaching out to everybody to kind of spread the word that you need to reserve the second Sunday in May in honor of mothers. And then finally, it's in 1914 then where it becomes a national holiday. But she gives herself full credit for that, that it was her dedication that got to where that it became official national holiday.
Fascinating. You know, and I think we celebrate Mother's Day and we don't know much of this history, if any of it, frankly. So Mother's Day actually had feminist roots, it strikes me, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, if you talk about the women who preceded Anna Jarvis, Anna Jarvis wasn't the first one to come up with the idea. And she admits that. She's like, I wasn't the first one with the idea. But she's the first one that, you know, took it all the way till it becomes a national holiday. But there are historians who like to point out Julia Ward Howe, for mm-hmm. example, who created the Mother's Peace Day, which was celebrated between 1873 to about 1913. But it was always celebrated in June, on June 2nd. And it was primarily celebrated by peace associations. So, but Julia Ward Howe's vision was a day for mothers to come together and talk about what role we can play in ending war. Because as mothers, we have an instinct to want to protect our children, not to send them off to die in battle. So she really saw Mother's Day in that early form as a day for mothers to become active. Mm-hmm.
An activist model.
Right. And Anna Jarvis does not have that same vision with her Mother's Day.
But she's really inspired by what her mother said, and she's going to create this day of commemoration of mothers because of what they represent.
Well, yeah, but the problem is the fact that Anna Jarvis was never a mother, mm-hmm. her perspective of motherhood is through the eyes of a daughter. So she doesn't envision Mother's Day in her form as something for activism. That wasn't her vision. Her vision was it was more of a homecoming, mm-hmm. that you take this one day out of the year and you spend it with your mother and you thank her for all the sacrifices she made to nurture you and to raise you. So because as a woman that hasn't had children, that was her version. That was her vision of mother. It was through the eyes of a child. So it's much more of a sentimental or domestic kind of setting. That was Anna's vision.
So what was Anna herself like? What was her upbringing like, for example? And was she typical of activist women of her generation?
She grew up in a middling economic family. She did, it's a typical path for a woman who doesn't marry. She has 2 years of what we would call college. She teaches school for a period of time, which is very typical job for a single woman in the late 19th century. It's not until the 1890s, she's 27 years old, until she moves away from Grafton, West Virginia, and she moves to Philadelphia to live with her brother, Claude, who's also unmarried. And Claude is a successful businessman in Philadelphia. He runs a cab company. So Anna works for a little bit. She works as a copy editor for an insurance company. So she's the first female copy editor for them. And so she does that for a little bit, but by 1912, she's not actively working. She's dedicated to this Mother's Day movement, and she doesn't hold an independent job. So from what I understand, then it was she funded her movement primarily through her brother's financial assistance.
I was wondering how she supported herself. So yeah. She did it through his efforts. Now, did she experience any kind of a backlash during her campaign to create Mother's Day as a holiday?
Sure, because it was her movement and she believed it was her holiday. So in 1912, she incorporates herself and creates the Mother's Day International Association, which is essentially her. And she will say we when she refers to the association, but it's essentially her. And it's headquartered out of her home that she shares with her brother and a younger sister. And she copyrights the words Mother's Day and the symbol of the white carnation. So she believes it's her legal property. So even after 1914 and it becomes a national holiday, she does not consider it public domain. She still considers it her holiday. So she would threaten to sue people who tried to use her holiday in ways that she disagreed with. Now, as a strong, independent woman, she would get ridiculed for that. And I don't think it's unusual for the time period when you have women taking untraditional paths and choosing to remain single and economically independent and fierce and defending what's theirs, that they're called crazy or erratic. You know, I think for some of the people she fought with, and she fought with, she didn't back down from anybody. This is a woman who went toe-to-toe with FDR. This is a woman who did not back down from any other politician or any powerful man. She wasn't afraid to stand up and accuse them of abusing her day or trying to profit from her day or trying to, you know, graft. They're grafters or infringers or profiteers. She always had a name for them. She would never back down. And so I think some of the media portrayal of her in her later years might be a little bit unfair. Because any kind of sensational story about her, that something that they did, that she did that was feminine, would make it into the newspaper. So even though today most people don't know who she was, during her lifetime, she was a minor celebrity. So she would make it into the New York Times or the Baltimore Sun, or right, she'd make it into the newspaper for some kind of attack. Or she's yelling at Floral Industries for explaining her day, or she crashed a convention of American War Mothers in 1925 because she accused them of using Mother's Day to raise money and then just pocketing it. And she was arrested once. So that kind of stuff made it into the newspapers, but we can look at it as a strong woman defending what she believed was her property. Whereas it was easy to dismiss her if you were one of her enemies, to dismiss her as a crazy old spinster.
So you mentioned that she went toe to toe with FDR. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Her fight with FDR really begins in the 1930s when he's president. In 1933, Congress alters the Mother's Day resolution that was first passed in 1914. In 1933, Congress kind of alters it and suggests that Americans, as part of honoring mothers on the second Sunday in May, that they donate to charities because it's the Depression, right? So you can understand why they changed. That just went through Anna Jarvis. She hated that. She hated the idea of, first of all, she hated the idea of mothers being pitied for anything, right? Mother's Day was unconditional gratitude, unconditional love to women. And it's not a day to pity them for being poor, pity them for not having, you know, certain kind of basics. It was a day that you just love and honor. And she had a heart, she just didn't trust charities. It's kind of odd. And we know Anna about her fights with the floral industry and the greeting cards industry. I mean, she hated that, but she also fought charities and would go after certain charities. So Eleanor Roosevelt was connected to some charities that used Mother's Day as a fundraiser. And so she didn't appreciate that. So she'd write letters to Eleanor Roosevelt telling her to stop it. And she would write letters to FDR telling her, you know, do you know what your wife is doing? And then she was mad at FDR because he was seeming to allow these charities to run with her day. And so she was not afraid to send a telegram, you know, telling him of how upset she was. So I always respected that, man. She would, you know, go after FDR as easily as she'd go after, you know, a florist down the street that was trying to profit off the sales of white carnation. She did not back down.
Seneca's 100 Women to Hear will be back after this short break.
So what did she want to have happen on Mother's Day? How did she want people to commemorate the day?
It was ultimately a homecoming. That's all it was. You go home and you spend the day with your mother. If you can't spend the day with her, write a letter. And so she did have a problem with commercialization, especially with like greeting cards. It was almost like greeting cards is a kind of facsimile of affection, right? If you truly loved your mother, you would sit down and write her a lengthy letter. That's sincere connection, not just the obligatory signature on a greeting card. So it wasn't about all the bells and whistles. It really was a homecoming. I mean, that's the simplest way to explain it, that you need to take the time out of your busy lives and to spend that one day with your mother. And it's not too much to ask.
Now, I read someplace that she had a quote about that, her reaction to the commercialization of Mother's Day.
Well, the easiest one, she always threatened to end it. And so I don't know how she thought she
could do that. Yeah.
I know, but she always threatened to do it. So one of her quotes was, and again, she says we, because she when she referred to her association, she said we, but mostly it's her. We would rather have 100 persons celebrate Mother's Day in a true spirit than we would prefer to have 1,000 persons abuse it. To us, the Mother's Day work has been carried to wonderful success. It would not be a loss if it is never again celebrated. When Mother's Day stops, we will stop it. And in our way, if we so choose.
You know, I'm thinking about Mother's Day and the flowers and the greeting cards and all that it has taken on today, and wondering just if Anna were still with us, would she be even more outraged?
Sure. I mean, she was already mad at the floor. By 1912, she's already mad at the floor industry and the greeting cards and candy makers. She's already mad. And the reason that she wanted it to be on a Sunday was because she didn't want it to be commercialized.
Everything was closed in those days, right?
Yeah, right. It was, she wanted it to be, you know, in the vein of what a holidays used to be. They used to be holy mm-hmm. days. So she wanted it to fall on a Sunday. So she even said, you know, she was upset by the early 20th century of how commercialized Christmas had become. And she didn't want her holiday to fall in that. But it was kind of naive of her to think that that wouldn't happen.
It's just so interesting that she was the sole operator, if you will, behind Mother's Day, that she actually licensed as such or copyrighted as such.
Yes. And she would have disclaimers. She would have whole letterhead and everything, and she'd write letters and she put disclaimers on there about unauthorized use of her day, and she would sue
you. How did you come to study her so intently?
It was by chance. I was in graduate school at West Virginia University in Morgantown, and I was already interested in the history of motherhood in general. And so I was asked to speak at the International Mother's Day Shrine in Grafton, West Virginia. So that's it's a museum that honors the first celebration of Mother's Day, because it was held in that church. So the church where the first Mother's Day service was held is in Grafton, West Virginia. And so it's now a museum. So I was asked to go just talk about motherhood at this museum. And then they gave me a tour and they took me into the kitchen. They're just showing me the kitchen of this church. And on the floor in boxes were a bunch of documents. And by chance, one of them told me, oh, yes, we have some documents that belong to Anna Jarvis. So I'm like, but you can't keep them on the floor in boxes.
An historian with documents in front of her? I can't imagine how you felt.
I cringed because my first image is, you know, one bad winter and the pipes freeze and burst. You're going to lose. And by that time, the documents were almost 100 years old. And so I volunteered to archive them for them. I'm like, let me tell you what boxes you need, archival safe boxes. Let me go through everything, put them safe, and we can put them up high where they're, you know, off the floor. And the only thing I asked for was permission to photocopy anything I thought was interesting. And so I figured maybe I would get a article or something out of it. And so I just became fascinated. I didn't know that much about the woman. I knew she was the founder of Mother's Day. I knew she got mad on how it was commercialized. But beyond that, I didn't know that much about her. So I'm going through all these documents. And I come across a transcribed letter that she wrote in 1933. And in this letter, she's just, you can tell that something has gotten to her. And she's just ranting. And she's listing all these people that she's mad at. And of course, the floor industry's in there. The greeting card industry's in there as part of her rant. But then she's naming off all these charities and she's naming off these politicians. And I'm like, well, what did these people do to you that got you so mad?
They contaminated her Mother's Day.
That's right. So that's how it started. And I started to look into who these charities that she identified that she resented so much and why, you know, why are you mad at Eleanor Roosevelt and why are you mad at Frances Perkins and why, you know, and then that just took me down the rabbit hole and it became my dissertation.
Oh, it was your dissertation.
Yeah.
And was there a particular angle of the dissertation topic?
It's the overall history of her movement, but each chapter is kind of broken up to, these different groups that she fought with, because that's an angle that nobody really covered. Everybody knows her fight with the floor industry. And there's been historians who've done nice work looking at the commercialization of holidays and that include Mother's Day. But here I am with these documents that are, and she's yelling at all these charity groups. And I just went with it. And I looked into all these different groups and why she was so mad at them. And it was fascinating.
And it's so interesting to me that she was mad at Frances Perkins and Eleanor Roosevelt, who yes. are viewed as great supporters of women in every way, frankly.
And they were doing good. They were involved with charities that were doing good work.
Yeah.
But with Anna, it was all about what we would call transparency. She just didn't believe that all these people who are using her day to raise money for women, that it was actually going towards women.
I see.
Yeah, it was going to line the pockets of paid organizers. So she was just very suspicious of that and vocally expressed that in every way. One of my favorite telegrams or letters, actually, was a letter she wrote to Frances Perkins. She actually compared her to Mussolini indirectly.
Oh my gosh.
So, and so she was, you know, Anna. That's why I was so impressed with her, man. She never backed down from anybody.
So what happened with the documents then at the museum? Are they in safekeeping today? And
they're safekeeping. They're all in archival safe boxes up high. So no flood will take them.
Well, you achieved something there too.
Yes.
Now, you know, today we're all struggling with the consequences of COVID, and there's been much written about the disproportionate impact it's had on women and certainly on the burden on mothers, working mothers especially. What do you think Anna Jarvis, if she were alive today, would say about honoring them today?
Well, of course she honors mothers in the idea of any duty to your family. So if that's a domestic duty, if you're a full-time mother, if that's economic, your duty is also supporter. She would respect that, right? It's the service that mothers give to their families, regardless in what vein. Of course, when she created her holiday, it's the early 20th century, and it's still unusual for married women to be working. But what's interesting is, and I thought about this particularly last Mother's Day when it was, you know, the peak of this pandemic, and Anna Jarvis would have loved the COVID Mother's Day. I mean, she would love the idea of a family needing to be isolated together, right? The simplicity of it. You don't go out and buy anything. You don't go out to a meal. It's just you at home with your mother. And the idea that you're taking this time and you made and being with your mother in the midst of this crisis, that you really, truly appreciate what she has done for you. So she would have liked that, the very kind of simplistic celebration that the quarantining and the social isolation has kind of forced us to do. She would have really appreciated that. Now, her mother, Ann Rhys Jarvis, was an activist in her own right in the late 19th century, particularly, well, more mid-19th century. In the 1850s, Ann Rhys Jarvis, so right before the war, created what were known as Mother's Day work clubs. And she organized women, these were mothers, she organized mothers to come together to learn about hygiene and sanitation. You know, this is the mid-19th century and infant mortality rates are high, right? So this is a time period where mothers didn't expect all their children to live. And frankly, Ann Rhys Jarvis had 13 children and only 4 lived.
Oh my.
To be adults. So she was, you know, so she created these clubs with other mothers and then would have been Western Virginia. And they learned about, you know, sanitation and how to stop the spread of diseases. So they're kind of, you know, it kind of reminds me of kind of first responders, right? These are women who were concerned about the spread of disease. And one thing they would do is that they would help quarantine a family. If an epidemic, you know, family is sick, they would help quarantine them and give them supplies so the disease wouldn't spread. So I imagine if Ann Rhys Jarvis was alive, and her Mother's Day vision was very much more of an activism, you know, that she, I imagine her creating, you know, modern day versions of Mother's Day work clubs to help women who are first responders, right? To help women who had to work and make sure they're safe and their families are safe. So it was interesting to kind of think about how these two women who had distinctly different versions of what a Mother's Day should look like, how they would deal with the COVID crisis.
Well, it's all really fascinating. And I can't imagine when Mother's Day rolls along next, which is not too far away, that I won't be thinking about Anna Jarvis in this conversation with you, Dr. Antolini. I wonder, since we have to come to a close, regrettably, to our fascinating conversation, you've spent years studying her. You're obviously deeply engrossed in who she was and what she did. I wonder what inspiration you take from her. She was clearly a very feisty woman.
Feisty is a good way to describe her. I admired her determination and her bravery, even in the face of being called crazy or being dismissed as a spinster or trying to kind of belittle her and her, you know, her role in this day. She would not back down and she would never apologize. She might deny saying something later, but she would never apologize for it. So everything she did in defense of her day, she never regretted it. She never backed down from that. She would regret that the day became commercialized and that would wear on her, but she doesn't apologize for her actions in establishing the day in the first place.
Well, Dr. Catherine Antolini, thank you so much for shedding light on Anna Jarvis, the founder of Mother's Day. It's just been so fascinating and interesting to have you join us today and tell us about her. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
I'll never see Mother's Day the same way again. What a fascinating person Anna Jarvis was. Here are 3 things I took away from that conversation. First, whatever her idiosyncrasies, Anna Jarvis had the right idea about Mother's Day. At its core is the unconditional love of mother for child and vice versa. And the best way we can honor that love is to spend real, meaningful time with our mothers. Ironically, COVID has thrown a new light on motherhood. It's forced us to narrow our activities and allowed us to appreciate the most important relationship in our lives. Finally, we should thank Anna Jarvis for creating Mother's Day and for persisting in her vision for it. As Dr. Antolini tells us, Jarvis was called crazy. She was derided as a spinster, but she never backed down and never apologized for what she believed was the most fitting tribute to motherhood. Tune in next Tuesday to hear about our next featured woman and discover why she's one of Seneca's 100 Women to Hear.
Seneca's 100 Women to Hear is a collaboration between the Seneca Women Podcast Network and iHeartRadio, with support from founding partner P&G. Have a great day.